Hi, I'm Steve Higgins, and my favorite thing is Doctor Who.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm Leah Jones. I'm your host, and it is Monday. Whoops. It's a 3-day weekend. It is Labor Day. And I got really sucked into a new TV show this weekend and totally missed that yesterday was Sunday. And when I realized it was Sunday, I decided I wanted to watch more TV based on recommendations from my friend Shy at Friday Night Movie Podcast and also Paul and Jason on How Did This Get Made. In the most recent mini episode, I watched all of season one of The Boys this weekend. The Boys is a very violent superhero show, but it imagines a world where there are consequences to superhero behavior. Like there's a support group for people who are victims of collateral damage of superheroes. And I just got totally sucked in to this world. So I'm not going to give any spoilers. Season two started this weekend, dropped a little early. It's on Amazon Prime. Season one is, the episodes are an hour long, but it was kind of rainy this weekend. So I just watched The Boys and was completely sucked in, stayed up way too late on Saturday night, ruined my sleep schedule because the story was so compelling. On today's episode, I interview Steve Higgins. Steve is a professor at Lewis and Clark, which is a community college in downstate Illinois. And we talk about Doctor Who. We had this conversation in early August, almost exactly a month ago. We talk a little bit about going back to school, campuses, the decisions that were being made in August. Obviously, a lot of college campuses are reevaluating the decisions they made this summer. But this is a really great, I say every conversation is a great conversation because they are. I think talking to people about things they love and giving them the chance to reflect on how it impacts them as a person is a really fun conversation to have. So without further ado, here is your Monday that feels like a Sunday, Labor Day episode. Stay home, stay safe. Wash your hands, wear your mask, and enjoy your favorite things. Welcome to Finding Favorites. This is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and we get recommendations without using an algorithm. Today marks a very important day in my podcast because this is the first time I'm interviewing a complete stranger. I've got Steve Higgins with me today. Steve is an associate professor of English, or is that an old title?
Professor. I'm a full professor. Yes. Great.
Steve is a professor of English at Lewis and Clark in downstate Illinois. Yeah?
Yes, that's correct.
So Steve is a professor of English at Lewis and Clark, which is a college downstate. And by downstate, I mean in Illinois, but south of Chicago. And Steve grew up with someone I went to college with, and that's where the recommendation came from. Well, first, hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm excited. So the rumor is that you were at the They Might Be Giants show at Millikan my senior year. Is that true?
That is incorrect. No.
You weren't there.
No, I was not.
Okay.
No. Denise asked me that. Denise Meyercord, our mutual friend, asked me, did you go to that They Might Be Giants concert? I said, no. So okay. She said, no, then you haven't ever met her. Like, well, fair enough. anyway, having me on, I'm excited.
I'm excited to have you here, even though you were not at that concert. So, Steve, how has before we get into talking about your favorite thing, how has the great pause been treating you? This COVID pause.
Pretty well, honestly. Because I am a professor, I've been able to do my job from home for the most part. During the first half, we went to spring break right when the state was shutting down. They gave us an extra week to kind of prep to go virtual when we came back. So essentially shortened the semester by a week. It was a steep learning curve. I don't generally do any kind of online teaching at all. I'm very much an extrovert. I very much need to be face to face with people, to interact with them. And that's how I prefer to teach. But, I got through it. They got through it. They were very understanding with me, and I was very understanding with them when it came to deadlines and things, which they appreciated. And and then summer came and I didn't teach the summer. So I've just kind of been enjoying the time with my family at home. My daughter is 8 and a half, and we just play and watch TV, watch Doctor Who.
Yes. That is a fun age too. Eight and a half.
She's fantastic. Yeah. And she's smart enough to be able to get some of my jokes, not smart enough to think that she knows it all.
All right.
Although that's coming on a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah. That's kind of a 10, 11, I think, sort of thing.
Right.
Well, good. Do you have a sense if you're going back in the fall? Will it be hybrid? Has your campus made any decisions?
Yes, we are going virtual, where I will essentially be hosting my class like a Zoom meeting every scheduled class period. They gave us a lot of different options, actually, where we could go completely online and do it as what they call an asynchronous class, where you're using discussion boards and postings and things like that. Or you could go and keep it as much like a face-to-face class as possible by doing this synchronized, let's all meet via Zoom kind of class meeting. And that's what I've opted for. Some of the other disciplines that are more hands-on are doing a virtual blended is what they're calling it, which is a little bit face-to-face because you've got to be there in person to do labs or clinicals or welding or auto repair. You've kind of got to do some of that by hand.
Right.
Any class that can, they're keeping it virtual to keep as few people on campus as possible, which I'm very pleased with. That's a great decision, I think.
Yeah, that sounds like you've got campus leadership with leadership qualities. Like making hard decisions and keeping it safe, I think is a hard decision for some campus administrators to make right now.
I know that there has been a little bit of blowback on them from that, from some people in the community who are like, oh, it's not real, blah, blah, blah. And yes, it is.
It is.
And even if there was some doubt about it being real, it's better to play it safe, especially when you're a huge school that has literally thousands of people coming and interacting. It's better to play it as safe as possible. So they're doing that, and I am very pleased with my administration for how they've handled it. So
great. And you're an English professor, and I was doing, I was Googling you, and I'll have to say your Google results are destroyed by the Steve Higgins on the Tonight Show.
Yes. who I've been a fan of for years and years. When I was in junior high, he had a show on the Comedy Channel called Higgins Boys and Gruber. And I discovered it. He and his brother, Dave, Dave Higgins and another comedian named Gruber. They had a show together, and I was like, oh, and I wrote a fan letter to him at the time, but never heard anything back. I'm the second most famous Steve Higgins. I shouldn't say that. Actually, for a brief time, there was a male model who was named Steve Higgins. And yeah. So I, as a joke, I totally used his photo as my icon on some message boards and things back in the day. Like, there he is. That's me. That's totally me. Come on.
That's amazing. I love it. There was, I felt really, you know, Leah Jones is not, it is a becoming a more common name. But when I first got on the internet, the two Leah Joneses on the internet when I first started blogging were me and a woman who was one of the first female pilots of Piper Cub airplanes. And okay. I felt really bad pushing down her achievements as a groundbreaking pilot for my blog about whatever, you know. I just felt a little guilty about pushing her off the internet. But so one of the articles I saw says that you teach comic books as literature, that's one of your classes. So what types of things are you teaching? Or was that like a one-time class and not your usual?
No, I do teach that every spring. Unfortunately, this past spring, I didn't get enough students enrolled, unfortunately. But most times, most years, I have enough. And it's a fantastic class. I really enjoy it. I teach it just like a literature class, basically. Except we're reading graphic novels instead of regular novels. And I break it up by genre. I guess we do a little bit at the very beginning, which is kind of like crash course in, if you've never read a comic before, here are some things to kind of watch out for, some of the more technical aspects and some of the vocabulary. But I tell them at the time, you don't have to memorize any of this. You're never going to be quizzed on it. It's really just, so if I use this term, you're not like, what?
Right.
But then after that, we jump right into the stories themselves. And so I break it up in five genres: superhero, crime, sci-fi, fantasy/horror, and realism. The books that I've most often taught, for superhero, I have done Watchmen before, but more recently I've been doing a graphic novel called Marvels. I think it's really more popular because Marvel movies are more popular. And right. So students are like, hey, there's Captain America, there's Spider-Man, and all that.
Right.
But we quickly abandon superheroes, so I can be like, yeah, superheroes don't control the whole medium.
But superheroes are a safe way into graphic novels for your students who like, they understand comic books, superheroes, that goes together. So that opens the door.
Right. And actually, that used to be more true, that students equated the two. But ever since Walking Dead, more students are like, comics are a thing that has multiple genres, and they understand, well, that here was a zombie comic.
Yeah.
So we do, when we do crime, we do a book called Criminal by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Then we do V for Vendetta as my sci-fi book.
Okay.
Alan Moore, David Lloyd. Then for fantasy horror, we do one of the volumes of Sandman by Neil Gaiman. And then for realism, I change that one up the most because that is the genre they are least familiar with.
Sure.
Stories about real life just told in comics form, sometimes memoirs, sometimes fictional. Most recently, I taught, I did two different books. I did Persepolis.
Yep.
By Marjane Satrapi, and then Fun Home by Alison Bechdel.
Nice.
And I switched to those two very recently because I kind of realized how male-centric my class was. I'm like, hey, how about I diversify my curriculum just a little bit and maybe not have it 99% white male,
mm-hmm.
white screen.
Yeah. Well, Fun Home and Persepolis are two. I mean, they're fantastic. What have I got? I've got there's Rosalind or Roz. She's got like really squiggly lines, and she's got one about her parents called Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant?
Yes. Roz Chast, I want to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'm going to be in a graphic medicine anthology coming out later this month.
Oh.
It's all comics about menopause, and okay. Linda Berry's in it. A friend of mine who she's the illustrator, and I wrote the story, and we wrote a story together. So it's very cool to be like in an anthology with these women who are giants of the medium, and then like me. It's exciting.
That's amazing. Yeah. Do you know the overall title of that anthology?
So it's called Menopause, A Comic Treatment.
Okay.
The editor is MK. Oh boy. Sarah Wick. She's known on Twitter as the Comic Nurse, and she did an autobiography graphic novel about she was a nurse during the AIDS crisis, and it was about a ward for AIDS patients in Chicago and what it meant to be a nurse in that ward.
Okay.
It's very good.
Well, I'm gonna have to seek that out too.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because HIV has a little bit of relevance to my topic today in some ways. I will get to it.
Let's start there. Steve, what are we here to talk about today?
We're here to talk about Doctor Who. Doctor Who has been my favorite television show since I was very young. I actually Googled to see, because I figured there were some nerds on the internet that must have done this already and tracked what the air dates of various episodes on PBS were. And sure enough, there's a website, broadwcast.org, and it's the D and the W then are capitalized, so it's a DW for Doctor Who.
Yep.
This website has been devoted to tracking when various Doctor Who stories were aired on various PBS stations in the U.S. In the late 70s, early 80s, and so on. And so I went on this website to find my local PBS station. That's how I watched Doctor Who when I was a kid. There was KETC is the PBS out of St. Louis.
Okay.
And WSIU is the PBS station out of Carbondale, Illinois.
Yep.
For SIU.
Southern Illinois University.
Southern Illinois. And both of those PBS station showed Doctor Who when I was young. The St. Louis station did it on Sunday nights at 10:30 p.m. in a form that is called a Whovie.
What is
and
a
what
Whovie?
That means? What that means is, in England, when the UK, when it was originally aired, it was aired Saturday nights. It was a half an hour program right after dinner, family programming. And it was serialized, of course. So if you wanted to watch the story, you had to tune in week after week after week. When they syndicated it, one of the ways that they decided it might sell better is to edit it all together. Not as four episodes, but as one movie length or movie. Yeah.
So it was a late night, Sunday night movie of of pulling together multiple Doctor Who episodes into 2 hour movies or chunks.
Sometimes longer. Yeah, because depending upon the storyline, sometimes they were it was 4 half-an-hour episodes, so you know it was about an hour and a half, 2 hours. Or sometimes the longer stories would run much later. Now I'm talking when this was happening, I was 7, 8, 9 years old, and so I wasn't very often allowed to stay up.
I was going to say a 10:30 Sunday night is a bold bedtime in the Midwest.
Exactly. Occasionally I could talk my parents into it, especially if it was during the summer.
Sure.
But the Carbondale station, WSIU, was showing them at, I want to say 5 PM and they were showing the half an hour episodes. They were showing them, in the serialized form. And it was that stretch in 1984 that really got me hooked. It was on, you know, I would watch my He-Man. I would watch my other but weekday afternoon cartoons.
Yep.
And then right before dinner, I would switch over to Doctor Who and watch that day's Doctor Who. And I just really loved the show. I was intrigued by the concepts, the science fiction concepts, the heroism of the lead character, the Doctor. At that time, it was mostly the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, who's obviously the best known for many years here in America.
He's the guy with the very long scarf.
Yes. Okay. Yes. But also his immediate predecessor, the third Doctor, John Pertwee, who drove a yellow vehicle called Bessie, a yellow car called Bessie. And he was the scientific advisor for UNIT. And even though when they originally had the third Doctor kind of take over the role, their goal was to kind of revitalize the program by bringing it back down to Earth. The character literally got stranded.
Yeah.
Got stranded on Earth, and all the threats he was dealing with were dealing with Earth invasions and things like that. As much as it was an attempt on their part to try to ground the series in familiar settings, for me, being a Midwestern kid, seeing British things, seeing London and seeing the English countryside, I was like, ooh, this is still very different. And I'm excited about that. And I think in a lot of ways that show was kind of responsible for one of the topics that I teach is British literature and my love of British culture and all things from Monty Python to
I was about to ask if you did the Doctor Who Monty Python, because Monty Python was my Monty Python and the Black Adder were my like childhood English comedies that I watched. I didn't watch Doctor Who until the new Doctors. So it wasn't something I ever watched, but Blackadder and Monty Python was on all the time.
Yeah. On the St. Louis station, they always aired it at 10:30, and 10 o'clock was a time that they aired a half an hour British comedy.
Yeah.
And Blackadder was one. In later years, Red Dwarf was one. But oftentimes it was Blackadder, Red Dwarf, and there were others. But again, when I was very little, part of the reason why I first got into the show was because of my uncle, my mother's older brother. He lived in Florida, which themselves had a large Doctor Who fan community down there, and one of the PBS networks out of Miami always did a big convention. And he was a big Doctor Who fan. Mm-hmm. And one year, I guess it was 1984, he must have come up for a visit. And he was the one who kind of introduced me to Doctor Who. So he was the one that got me into the show. And I idolized him. I thought he was just the coolest guy. And he liked the show. And I dug it, too. So it was kind of a bonding thing for us throughout his life. Every time that we would go and visit him, you know, he'd show off some Doctor Who stuff that he got at some convention or some shop. One year he went to a Doctor Who convention and he met John Pertwee, the third Doctor, and he got his autograph for me on a headshot.
Yeah.
Which I promptly folded it up.
Yep.
So I could put it in my pocket to take to school to show to all my friends who watched Doctor Who. But I still have it today, but you can see very clearly the crease marks on it from where I folded it up and put it in my pocket.
But there is something great about when we were fans before it was so precious that you couldn't crease an autograph. Like, that's a delightful story.
Yeah. And it really was the kind of thing when I was a kid that nobody else had even heard of it.
Right.
So when I was playing on the playground with kids, we were playing He-Man or something similar to that. We weren't really playing Doctor Who.
Yeah. Although Doctor Who would have been more fun.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I didn't make my brother frequently play Doctor Who with me. My brother was 5 years younger than me. And so, I'm like 8 years old, 9 years old, and I'm making my brother, the toddler, be the companion as I'm the doctor and we go on adventures.
That is fantastic.
I would put a laundry basket upside down on his head and make him be a Dalek, and I had to run away from him.
I one of the things that I love about Doctor Who, and I have only seen the modern seasons, but I love that the Daleks, the Cybermen, the enemies, they have not modernized much. You know, yeah. they've made some concessions so that some Daleks can like go upstairs now. But I do love that there's this very kind of 1950s, 1960s aesthetic still to the bad guys.
Yeah, their look is like slightly more sleek.
Yeah.
But that's about it. And I like that, too. I think, you know, a classic car, you don't want to tinker with the design of that too much. You obviously want it to be fitting today's standards of aerodynamics or whatever, right. But you don't want to mess with perfection. And I think the Dalek design is pretty darn perfect.
Yeah,
as it is. You know, it's been baked into the show from the early days of the show that this would be a show that would roll with the times and evolve and change, you know.
Yeah.
When they first came up with the idea of the main character regenerating and changing his appearance at the time.
Right, of course.
They could basically get around the fact that we want to keep the show going, but our lead actor, who the show is named after, William Hartnell was the first doctor, and he had arteriosclerosis, I believe. And he just was not able to handle the rigors of filming anymore. Sure. And they knew they were going to need to replace him. And they invented this conceit of regeneration, and it has led to the show, you know, continuing. The show began in 1963, and here we are in 2020, and it's still airing. And evolving and changing, yet still true to what it always has been. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah. What do you think is the
truth at the center of Doctor Who? Like, what do you think their mission, there's, what is the storytelling of mission of Doctor Who, like, in your opinion?
There's been a lot of discussion in New Who recent years of the Doctor chose this name of the Doctor for himself to show that he was always there to help, that he's always there to lend a hand, to find those in need and help them survive, help them through adversity. And that is a big part of it for me. I think that he is a hero. The current Doctor, Jodie Whittaker, I think that she embodies that in the character very, very well. As well. And for her too, some of the New Who doctors have been very grim at times because they've had this darkness in their past. And, my planet went through a war and I'm the last survivor. One thing that I think that Jodie has brought back to the role in some ways is a joy. A joy of I'm exploring, I'm seeing the universe, and I've got my best friends with me, and let's go check it out. Tennant, the 10th Doctor, David Tennant, did a really great balance of that, where he had the grief, but he had the joy as well. Jodie really is, in a lot of ways, to me, pure joy, and I love her in the role. I think she's great.
I think she's amazing. And I don't know if there's a season that has just left me crying through more episodes than since she became Doctor. They are writing these episodes in the world we currently live in. So every episode feels like a rebuke of both our current administration and like of Brexit. Like every episode in the last season felt like we were getting a talking to from a very stern teacher. And I almost every episode I felt like in a good way, like a show with a moral center felt really good to consume right now.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I have had conversations with friends about Jodie's first season as the Doctor, about how much of it has felt to me like it was about Brexit. And Doctor Who has always done that. Doctor Who has always, in subtle ways, referenced what was going on in the world. You know, if you look at some of the 80s episodes, you can see some very obvious Thatcher stand-ins. And you go back to the 70s episodes again of Pertwee and Tom Baker, and you can see references to the politics of the time and minor strikes. I think it's only natural that, again, the series grows and evolves and changes with the times, and it still then is relevant in a lot of ways socially. One of my favorite things about Doctor Who as well is that it can be, even within one season, it can be six or seven different things. You can have historical episodes, and you can have hard sci-fi, and you can have lighthearted romp, and they all fit next to each other very well, because it's baked into the premise of the Doctor can go anywhere and any time, any when, and meet anyone. And it's again something that I feel like Jodie's two seasons have gotten back to. In a lot of ways, that it's felt more like classic Doctor Who to me in some way. Not that I dislike other seasons. There's always discussion of who's your favorite Doctor. My favorite Doctor is always whichever one I've watched most recently. Because I just love it. I love it all. Unabashedly. They want to criticize sometimes the effects back in the day and the wobbly sets, and I don't see the wobble. It all feels real to me. I'm drawn into that world. I love it.
I got into Doctor Who. I've talked about it on another episode. I think there was a period of time when I was just watching a I was binging shows that started with W's. And even though Doctor Who starts technically with a D, but like I watched The West Wing, I watched The Wire, and Doctor Who, to me, were like all one viewing chapter of my life. And I had seen Matt Smith.
That's a very eclectic mix right there. The Wire and Doctor Who next to each other. That is.
Yeah, I'm not defending my. Oh, and I think possibly also Weeds, the show Weeds, at the same time. I'm not someone who I can't explain it, but whatever. I got into this like very W binging W shows, but in it I watched Matt Smith had been on a show on the BBC about the Parliament. It's called Party Animals.
And okay.
Right. He's like a Parliament. He's an aide in Parliament, and it's not a comedy, but it's not, it's a dramedy happening in the halls of Parliament.
Okay.
And I recognize that guy from Tumblr. Because I followed enough people on Tumblr that were into Doctor Who that I was like, I know that guy. He's on Tumblr all the time. Maybe I will watch Doctor Who so I understand the Tumblr memes. And this guy was good in Party Animals, so I'll probably like him in Doctor Who. And that's how I got into Doctor Who.
I was the opposite. I was a Doctor Who fan on Tumblr.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to have to check out this Supernatural show that I see memes and images of. And so eventually I went back and watched all of Supernatural.
Basically that's like 25 seasons now. All right. So you said that one of the reasons that you teach British literature is Doctor Who. Yes. Did you have the opportunity to study abroad in London or get to visit or anything?
Yes, I have been to the UK 4 times now. Never for longer than a week, unfortunately. I can't remember if it's 3 or 4 times, but through the beauty of Doctor Who, several years ago, late 90s, early aughts, I spent a lot of time on the internet in fan communities. Part of that was that my first teaching job, I taught at a very, very tiny community college in Southern Illinois called Olney Central College. It was a town of 8,000. Yeah. My family all lived at least 2.5 hours away. All my friends from college lived at least 2.5 hours away. So the only way I had to kind of interact with anybody with similar interests was through the internet. And so a lot of time spent on message boards and things like that. And so through that, I made a friend. His name is David Steele. And he is Scottish, lives in Scotland, and is a huge Doctor Who fan. And he and I became very good friends over the years, not just Doctor Who, but a lot of other common interests in music and comics and things. And so the first time that I went to visit him was in 2010, I believe. And that first time that I went, I went to visit him in Glasgow, where he lives. And then we took a brief trip down to London for a couple of days. One of the things that we did when we were in Glasgow was we went to a Doctor Who convention.
Fun.
And one of the things that we did when we were in London was go to the Doctor Who exhibition, which had a lot of props and costumes and things like the face of Beau, like the actual face of Beau.
Wow.
Was there as part of the exhibition. So I have a picture of me like kneeling next to the face of Beau and pretending to be David Tennant, putting my hand on it. It's me. I look a bit different, but I'm here. And then also, as we were going around London, really just like, hey, let's pose in front of the London Eye, like in Rose, mm-hmm. and you be the Ninth Doctor, and let's run across Westminster Bridge, not because it's Westminster Bridge,
right.
but because it, Daleks went across in Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Yeah.
Hey, look, post office tower, like from the War Machines, William Hartnell episode from 1966. Because that's the level of nerd that I am. It's not, I'm excited that I'm in this beautiful city. I'm excited that I'm in this place where they filmed Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But that was
it got you all over the city. So I think if Doctor Who is the reason you run around London and you know what things are, that's great.
Yeah, so I have been there then. I think it is three times that I've been to visit him. The most recent was 2 years ago now, I want to say. Also became really good friends with his sister, Allie, and she has come here to visit us twice as well. So Doctor Who has meant a lot to me, not just because it's a show that I love, but because I've made friends with people from all over the world. They're not the only friends I have within fan community, but they are really two of my absolute best friends that, you know, I have Zoomed with during the great pause, as you referred to it, just as frequently as my parents.
So you said earlier, you made a comment that, as we were talking about COVID and how it related to the HIV crisis, and then you said that HIV and Doctor Who had a connection for you. So do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I mentioned before my uncle, who was a great influence on me when I was very young. And who got me into Doctor Who. And he every time I would see him, he would have a Doctor Who magazine for me that I would then, you know, cut all the pictures out of and tape to my wall. Or he would have Doctor Who board games, or he would have episodes recorded that we hadn't gotten yet in St. Louis of the new Doctors that I was like, oh, and he would, even though he had recorded it for himself, he would be like, ah, I'll let you have it because you're my favorite nephew. He was so generous to me, and he was just, like I said before, my favorite uncle. He was, since I was very, very little at the time, I didn't really understand that the man that he lived with, that they were little more than roommates. And it took me a while to eventually understand that. And he was a gay man with HIV, living with HIV. And I didn't know that until I was in junior high and high school. And
right.
And he ended up passing away of HIV related illness in 1994. It really affected me. He is one of the key figures in my life. And the loss of him affected me greatly. And, one of the things that I frequently think about the show now that it's back is I wonder what Uncle Wes would have thought of these new episodes. I bet he would have dug it so much.
Yeah.
In a way, I've kind of felt like teaching my daughter about the show has been a way of doing what he did to me, not just for the self-interested reason of I get to watch Doctor Who and I don't, at my house, and I don't have to shoo people out of the room or anything, but she has become a fan, and I can see that kind of continuing, that when he made me a fan, I'm making her a fan. And he was a phenomenal figure in my life and very influential, and I still miss him. It's been 25 plus years since he passed away, but I still think about him a lot. Again, especially in regards to Doctor Who, how would he have felt about Jodie's run? How would he have felt about the 50th anniversary and Day of the Doctor and all of that? How would he have felt about that? I've been able to go to conventions and I've been able to go to London and you know, I would have surely brought those pictures back to show him and would have gotten autographs that I could give to him.
That he could fold up and put in his pocket.
Exactly. So yeah, that is the connection there. He was my uncle, you know, so he was my idol in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And hugely influential in one way that I, you know, I'm a cishet white male living in the Midwest. And I think it would have been very easy for me to go down a route of being very closed-minded and linear in my thinking and not being open to other perspectives. But he was the first person who I had to flip a switch in my head and say, okay, well, the other boys at school are making fun of this kid for being a little bit effeminate.
Right.
And using derogatory terms. And I could go right along with that. But wait a minute, there's my uncle. And how do I feel about that? And showed me, taught me how to open my mind to other experiences, basically. So not just Doctor Who fandom, but made me the pink Okami bastard that I am today.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know at what point you knew he was living with HIV, but I'm 43. I think we're close to the same age, right? So we were like a year younger than Ryan White, who was, and I grew up in Indiana. So he was kind of the person and he had full blown AIDS from a blood transfusion. And he was like the face of AIDS and HIV growing up in Indiana.
Yeah, that and Pedro Zamora, Real World, season 3.
The last good season.
We're kind of the ones that in pop culture kind of changed the conversation.
Wow. Well, thank you for telling me the more full story of his life. It sounds like he had a lot of gifts for you, and those one-on-one relationships are what can break through, even though they take so much effort.
Yeah. And I am the same way, you know, I'm an educator. And so I do try to not just instantly block. I think about how can I reach this person? How can I educate this person? And I think about how many people, not just my uncle, but so many people that I knew were patient with me in regards to some backwards ideas that I've had over my entire life, not even just when I was young, but even up to recent years. The things that you have to realize, okay, I'm saying this because it's what I've learned and subconsciously taken in from the culture, and I need to unlearn that, and I need to see things from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And all the different people I've had in my life, again, my uncle among them, who took the time to say, well, no, what if you look at it from this point of view? My other big influence in my life, pop culture wise, it's Doctor Who and it's Mr. Rogers. I'm very much a PBS junkie when I was a kid, and those lessons, which were vital in Doctor Who and are vital with Mr. Rogers, that we're all living our lives and to be empathetic to others and understand things from their point of view and show you care and show that kindness. It's philosophies that I try to live by that are, again, inspired in part by pop culture and the things I loved.
Yeah.
And that's why the flip side of it can be so hard sometimes. And talking about the QAnon type people, the conspiracy theorists and things, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with any of the not my doctor rhetoric that has come out from some very closed-minded Doctor Who fans of Jodie Whittaker is not my doctor, not part of the real canon of the show. And the show essentially ended when she started, and just makes me sick. Yeah. How can you watch a show like Doctor Who and have those kinds of ideas? I just don't get it.
Right. It means that you haven't taken a lesson of a single episode if you can't accept her as the doctor.
You've purely engaged with it on a plot perspective of look at those cool robots and look at those cool effects and things, and not taken in the themes and taken in the small character moments.
Yeah.
Which are what I love about the show.
Yeah, I think that is something really phenomenal, because you can say more with alien interaction. You can address the human condition in a different way when you're saying these are different species of life, and
we
zoom out far enough. Yeah,
we accept the lessons allegorically. We accept them through the symbols more readily in some ways, I think, than if someone were to sit you down and lecture about racism or homophobia or transphobia,
climate change or war or technology. Yeah. So have you ever had a lull in your Doctor Who fandom? Was there ever a time when you had a break or it just wasn't? I mean, it is really clear that this is like a really important piece of art and media and pop culture in your life, but did you ever have a break?
Yes. And it was kind of natural that I had that break because the show took a break. The classic era of the show ended in 1989. And that kind of coincided with me hitting junior high and high school. I was still a huge nerd, don't get me wrong. But you know, part of it was, okay, well, let's put away this thing that was from your childhood. It was also, there were still books coming out, but they were kind of hard to find. Whereas Star Trek: The Next Generation was new and flashy and fresh, and it was everywhere. And so there was a while then that I think if you'd asked me what's your favorite science fiction show, I would have said Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it took the show coming back to revitalize it. They call those in the fan community, they call that the wilderness years. The years that Doctor Who survived via audio adventures and novelizations and things like that. And it really did wane for me for a number of years. Even when the show came back, I was really into the current show, but I wasn't that much into the classic show until I actually happened to go to Sam Goody.
Yeah, I remember Sam Goody.
The Sam Goody in a local mall was closing, and they had things for sale, getting rid of all their merchandise, and they had some Doctor Who DVDs, and they were deeply discounted.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I remember these from watching them from when I was a kid. And so I bought a couple, and now I own them all. And some of them I own on DVD and Blu-ray, and I had VHSs as well. And
right.
I own the novelizations, and I also listen to all the audio adventures of the past doctors, and I'm full on in it.
All in.
Right. So I had that lull, but I grew up and realized, as the doctor himself says, that what's the point in being grown up if you can't be childish once in a while?
Sure.
I didn't need to put away those childish things. I couldn't revel in them. And here I am.
It's so fun. So your daughter, 8 and a half, is she watching any modern Who, or is she watching classic, or do you pick and choose the episodes?
We watch all of it. So her first episode that she ever watched was the Matt Smith Christmas special, The Doctor, The Widow and the Wardrobe.
Okay.
Because she was 1 month old when Christmas rolled around, and I'm like, we're going to watch Doctor Who. And there have been a few times where it has been a little bit much for her. The end of Capaldi's run, Peter Capaldi, the 12th Doctor, ended with a storyline where his companion Bill gets blasted by a Cyberman, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's graphic. There's like a hole in her that is a sizable hole.
Yeah.
You can see through her. And I was really worried that that was going to be too much for her.
Yeah.
But she kind of brushed it off as like, it's just a show, Daddy. Like, okay.
She didn't. What about the like the gravestone angels,
Yeah, not that she's seen Blink. She's seen I think that's the only one, Weeping Angels, that she's seen.
Weeping Angels,
the first
yeah.
Blink. And she was a little bit scared by it, but not too bad either. You know, there are other things that she finds very scary,
wow.
But it's amazing how Doctor Who, she's kind of completely able to separate it. I was concerned there was the in Jodie's first season, Arachnids in the UK was an episode with giant spiders. And
yeah.
I thought she was terrified, but she was just like, oh yeah, there's spiders.
All right.
Yeah. She's completely able to differentiate between fantasy horror.
Yeah.
In Doctor Who and other things that seem more real to her.
When somebody wants to start, when one of your students tells you that they want to start Doctor Who, where do you tell them to start?
That is a great question. I always direct them towards the modern era, because as much as I love the classic era, it can be off-putting if you're a modern kid.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, this is cheesy looking. It's old. And I think the best way is to look at new episodes. And so sometimes I think, okay, well, do you already know who David Tennant is from Jessica Jones and Good Omens and things like that? If so, let's start with David Tennant. Let's start with stories. Are you familiar with Jodie Whittaker and what's happening? I think that Jodie's first episode is a really good one to kind of come in cold. I tell people this about Doctor Who a lot, actually. I get people asking me, where should I start? Because there's right. so much. And I say, you know, the most recent season is honestly, they try really hard to make it accessible.
Yeah.
And the fact that you get a new doctor every now and again, and you get new companions, means that you can start fresh. And you don't have to know all that backstory. If you do know that backstory, it's richer. But if you watch it, you're like, huh, I guess these guys fought the doctor before. Well, that's interesting. And then maybe you want to go back and check it out.
Yeah. Cause Jodie's first episode is, it's how she ends up with three companions,
right?
She meets them in the first episode.
Yeah. They're on that train and she falls through the roof.
Yep.
And it's like, well, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
Just instantly. What's going on? What's wrong here?
Yeah.
And you're like, who is this lady? Why is she, why did she fall through a roof? How is she doing all these amazing things? And you get drawn in. the first episode of Capaldi's last season too was another really good one that I thought you can start right there. And it's called The Pilot. The name of the episode, The Pilot, has a double meaning in that there's a pilot that's part of, and it acts in a way as a pilot to the show. You can start fresh. Matt Smith's first episode, The 11th Hour, is another good one that if you've never watched Doctor Who before, you can just jump right in there. So I usually try to gauge why are you wanting to come into Doctor Who right now? Is it because you know who David Tennant is and you want to know more about him? Well, maybe I'll show you a random episode. Did you like that? Okay, well then let's jump back and let's...
Right.
Because that Doctor Who rewards multiple viewings and it rewards people who dive into that huge back history.
So one of the things that you are involved in... is it called Drink and Ink? Ink and Drink?
Ink and Drink, yes.
Tell me a little about that.
Yeah, Ink and Drink Comics is a group here in the St. Louis area that every 6 months or so we put out an anthology of short stories of comics, short comics. We generally have a theme to it of a genre. Horror or crime or sci-fi or whatever. We tell everybody, okay, put together a short story and all of us work on our stuff on our own. And then we compile them together and we put out a book. Like I said, about every 6 months. We started in 2010.
Okay.
Our first book was called Spirits of St. Louis. It was a horror book. And we've been doing 2 a year ever since.
That's great.
We'll be celebrating our 10th anniversary here in 2020. We're going to try to put out a best of anthology, as well as we have a superhero book in the works right now as well.
Are they graphic novels or is it a combination or are they straight short stories?
It's comics. So yeah, it's all short comics. So it's not a graphic novel in the sense that they all kind of relate to one another, but it is illustrated. So yeah, it's incredibly rewarding, creatively. And, again, as an educator, I'm like helping people out who want to get into comics.
Right.
Here's a way to get your feet wet. So many people, when they want to write comics, they have this huge idea for a 100 issue storyline that's a gigantic thing. And I always tell them, you know, as much as George Lucas had the saga in mind, he still made one movie that could stand alone and introduced you to the world. And if you wanted to then continue adventures in that world, that's great. But if Star Wars A New Hope was the first only movie that ever came out, you could watch that and it would be a movie. And that's what you have to do. You have to look at first, let me tell one story, one little slice that is intriguing enough to want to draw more people in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the creative problem when it comes to short stories, but it's also a great challenge to wrap your head around and to incite your curiosity and your creativity. And other retail booksellers are available, and you can buy them through them too.
They should go to inkanddrinkcomics.com, find out the titles, and then do maybe some research to figure out, can they get it through maybe they're a local shop or through Amazon or so.
Shop small, shop local, and they'll be able to buy our books too. We're available through Ingram Book Distributor. So anywhere that deals with Ingram, which is pretty much any bookseller in the U.S., you'll be able to get our books.
Great. Anything else that you'd like to promote or mention?
No, Ink and Drink is really it. That's my main creative outlet. So, but I do want to thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak. It's been great to talk about my passion and to show how that interweaves with who I am as a person as well. So
yeah, I'm going to need to go and watch some Doctor Who with my dinner tonight.
sounds like a great plan.
Yeah. I look forward to it. Well, thank you, Steve. This has been a delight. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.